I'm Marco Werman, and you're tuned to The World. In 2017, the Trump administration drastically reduced the number of refugees allowed into the U.S., and next year that number is expected to be even lower. There's also greater scrutiny now of the programs that are resettling those refugees who are already here, and also what happens once refugees have to fend for themselves. In Pittsburgh, rising housing costs have forced some refugees into an isolated public housing project called Northview Heights. Reporter Erica Barris went there.
This is what it's like when you drive up to Northview Heights.
Good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? Do I need to show you my ID?
Yes,
ma'am. Everybody who enters this place has to show ID. Every time. There are only two entrances into this sprawling, isolated project. That's part of the Pittsburgh City Housing Authority's efforts to keep track of who's coming and going and curtail violence and gun and drug trafficking. Bill Gandy grew up here before there were armed guards and 200 security cameras everywhere. He doesn't like the way it is now.
It just feels like a prison system to have a checkpoint in front of a neighborhood. That's already a bad start, to tell you the truth. It's like going into a military camp.
But at the same time, he gets it. After he left a few decades ago, Northview Heights, with its high rise and streets of townhouses, became way more dangerous. Even now, there's more violence than when he was growing up. This summer, he organized a reunion for people who grew up there, friends who hadn't seen each other in years, traveling from Georgia, Michigan, and right up the street.
I'm trying to remember you.
I'm a Hips.
You're a Hips.
Yeah, you
okay.
Andy?
Yeah, of course. I know all the Hips.
You Bill?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, I'm Lisa.
Lisa, oh, snap. Oh, okay, I got you now.
Yeah, how you been?
I'm
David.
Good.
I'm
how
David.
You been?
I'm
Those gathered remember the happier times. There were marching bands, clubs, and gun violence was unheard of. They all agree it changed when Pittsburgh's steel industry crashed, and then the crack cocaine epidemic took off. Everyone knows someone who was killed. There's even a memorial, a poster board with dozens of pictures of those lost to gun violence. Katrina Herring put it together. She left Northview Heights after her cousin was killed there in the mid-90s.
For this moment, we can also celebrate the loving memories of our kings and queens of Northview Heights, gone but not forgotten. Yo!
Hundreds of people still live in Northview Heights. But violence has driven out lots of the old-timers. And Bill Gandy is surprised at who many of them are. Africans who came to the U.S. as refugees. He worries about them trying to start their new lives here.
I don't think that's an environment that you would want to bring somebody new into this country in after they've already left a traumatic situation. You're bringing them back to another area where you can experience trauma.
One of those newcomers is Samuel Bomera. Today, he has a massive stack of mail. He's kept it in a spare backpack until this moment, when he gets a home visit from his social worker, Viola Baguetta.
Hello.
Hello.
She's there to check in on the family and go through his mail with him. His English isn't great. While they go through a pile of papers, he holds his three-week-old twins. There's a lot to read through. Letters from the kids' schools, doctors, Social Security Administration, Medicaid, the food stamp program. Samuel Bomera and his family, wife, five kids, a sister, are from the Democratic Republic of Congo. They came to Pittsburgh after years of living in refugee camps in Uganda. Their resettlement agency found them an apartment on a bus line. Federal refugee funds paid their $900 rent for the first few months. The agency, Jewish Family and Community Services, where Viola Baguetta works, paid for the next few months.
After that, so the family was trying to pay, but you could tell that it's a struggle, and we don't really have that kind of funding to sustain them forever. It's for a short amount of time when we can. We always have a little bit of emergency funding that we can tap in here and there, but it's not forever. So that's how he ended up coming here.
Here is Northview Heights, where each family only pays a third of their income. For Samuel Bomera, that's $500 a month. It was not his American dream, but it's what he could afford.
I see this way as you don't have any other choice. You have to live here because this is what you can afford. But if I have money, I want my family, my children, to be raised in a comfortable place, in a beautiful house. But here, you don't know what's going to happen. So I see this as a survival place for the time being, when I don't have any other choice.
About a decade ago, right around the time Pittsburgh had its well-touted economic resurgence, housing costs started rising. First, a few Somali families were priced out of their apartments, and they moved into Northview Heights. Other refugee families from the Democratic Republic of Congo and Burundi followed. Soon, the community became what some people call Half-African. That's half Black, half African. Leslie Eisenman runs the agency that resettled Samuel. She says refugee families moving into Northview Heights isn't ideal.
I'm mixed about it. I wouldn't intentionally want families to be in public housing if they didn't need to be.
But then again,
there's a rental housing crunch for anyone living here at the low income end of the spectrum.
And while cheaper rent is a big plus, some people say they're also drawn to the communal life here. Everyone lives close by. The new arrivals say it reminds them of how they lived in Africa and how the refugee camps were. A couple blocks away from Samuel Bomera's family lives Awais Mawila. Originally from Somalia, he's been in Northview Heights for 5 years. He says it's nice to have so many Somali neighbors. They help each other navigate this new country. While we're talking, his uncle stops by. Mawila speaks English, has a computer, and an internet connection. He's always in demand. He helps his uncle buy a plane ticket. Mawila, who, like most refugees, fled violence in his home country, doesn't feel great raising his children here, where gun violence is a regular occurrence. This summer, residents say there was a shootout between Somali and African-American teenagers.
That shooting, I don't know what the cause is, but it really affected the whole community of thinking again, saying, okay, are we again finding ourselves in the middle of such kind of situation which we were not expecting to happen in the United States?
Samuel Bomera was rattled too.
It was like being back in Congo, hearing the gunshots. And I'd think, am I back in a war zone or am I in a safe country? That's when I kind of regret being here.
Bomera wants to move, but right now his wages at the chocolate factory where he works just cover their expenses. In a good month, the most he can save is $50. For The World, Erica Barris, Pittsburgh.
Erica's reporting is supported by a fellowship from the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University. Tomorrow, she'll tell us more about the community in Pittsburgh and how violence there triggers memories of the violence the refugees left behind.
When a person loses a loved one to violence, they do grieve, but it's a different type of grief because that person has been ripped away from them.
That's tomorrow, right here on the show. I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World for one more spin here in 2017. Yesterday on the show, we heard about refugees living in a public housing project in Pittsburgh called Northview Heights. They're there because they can't afford the higher housing prices in other parts of Pittsburgh, which in this case means that refugees from war zones in places like Somalia and Congo are now living in a community that suffers from high rates of gun violence with potentially traumatic results. Here's Erica Barris with part two of her story.
Keisha Allen's lived in Northview Heights her whole life, and it's mostly been fine. Then last August, while at home, something terrible happened.
Next thing I know, I heard gunshots.
When that happens, there's a routine.
I hollered to my neighbor across the court. I was like, McCray, you all right? She said, yeah, I'm all right. So she said, Miss Keisha, you all right? I said, yeah, I'm all right.
And so on, yelling out to all the neighbors until they heard someone say,
man down.
Allen thought about her 26-year-old son who just left the house.
I ran down our little dirt pathway. By the time I got over there, my son was on the ground, feet shaking. I'm holding his hand, telling him, you're Keisha's kids. You can defeat this. You could conquer this. You're stronger than this.
He wasn't. After he died, Keisha Allen slid into a profound depression. She couldn't work. She couldn't function. The loss of her son gutted her life. After a few months,
it was either seek help or keep suffering with a nervous breakdown and keep ending up in mental institutions, in and out. So I went and seeked help, and right now I'm still getting help.
Some of that help comes from Vanessa Myers-Snyder, a therapist with the nonprofit, the Center for Victims.
Good morning. Happy belated birthday. How are you? You get my text?
She spends at least one day a week in Northview Heights. She sees trauma in most of the people here, she says. And the type of loss many residents have experienced, she says, is different.
When a person loses a loved one to violence, they do grieve, but it's a different type of grief because that person has been ripped away from them.
Keisha Allen's pain is still pronounced. Most days, she wears a shirt with her dead son's name and image on the front. Written on the back, "Mommy loves you." Because of all the security cameras at Northview Heights, her son's killer was caught. That was last year. This year, there's been plenty of gunshots, but just one homicide here. It happened a few doors down from where Fatuma Muya lives. Every time she or her husband or their children leave their house, they walk by where a 16-year-old boy was killed. For Fatuma, it feels the way it did decades ago, at the start of the Civil War back home.
We just think we are in a time of 1991 in Somalia. Because the same situation was happening when the war started, this is the way it started. Like a little shooting here and there, then it became a big war.
She spends time with a different psychologist, Kathy Sigmund. Sigmund is in private practice and is also chaplain with a nearby church. She works with people who have violence-triggered trauma, mostly through talk therapy. But the biggest thing she can do for people, she says, is just being there and helping them with all of the other problems looming in their lives.
It's time for me to talk to Dr. Kathy. Come on.
Kathy Sigmund started coming here in the 90s when she saw the resources directed to communities that would experience a one-time traumatic event. But when it came to a place like Northview Heights, there was nothing really.
And we were having murder after murder.
It feels like she knows everybody here.
Oh, there's Pooch. Poochie, Mary.
These days, she also works with refugees like Fatuma Muya. In the time since Kathy Sigmund started working here and Fatuma Muya moved in, crime has gone down. That's the result of years of efforts from the authorities like David Higdon, who poured years of his life into this place. He was a U.S. attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania and put away gang members from the Crips and Bloods, and in the process, curbed a lot of the trafficking and gun violence that came along with them. He also got to know people in Northview Heights. And the one thing that really stayed with him, he says, is how much trauma existed in longtime members of the community.
What if at night you went to bed and you slept in your bathtub because you were afraid that a stray bullet would kill you or your child? What impact would that have on you? Would it raise your blood pressure? Would it make you more anxious? Would it make you depressed? And the answer is, of course it does.
And that applies as much to refugees like Fatuma Muya as lifelong residents like Keisha Allen. Research has shown that exposure to prolonged traumatic experience, like living through a war, can change the way our brains are wired. It's an evolutionary response to stress. Researchers have looked at the kind of behavioral responses seen in some urban communities compared to what responses war veterans have. And usually, they're the same. And for some people like Muya, who lived through a war as a civilian and moved into Northview Heights a few years ago, many things can offset depression.
So because we are people who have seen or faced a lot of situations, we just think maybe one day we'll be bigger. That's what we think. Is making us depressed.
What she sees here triggers trauma from the past she never dealt with, like watching her teenage brothers get killed back home in Somalia. Like Keisha Allen, who lost her son outside her door, Fatuma Muya has had to seek help for her depression. She's been hospitalized a few times and goes to therapy.
They give me some medicines. They kept me at the hospital. I start having counseling here and there. But right now, I'm a little bit better.
Her big worry now is not for herself, but for her kids. She doesn't want them to start out their lives with the kind of trauma she experienced back in Somalia, or expose them to the kind of violence she witnessed as a child.
I don't think it's a good idea to make your children grow up in here. But if I see the environment and if I see my children age in the future, I don't want to lose my children in the future. I don't want to lose my children's life in the future.
For now, Fatuma Muya keeps her front door locked and her kids inside. Sometimes she sees young men walking around, African or African-American. From the back, they look like the six brothers she lost in the early 90s. That makes her cry, brings about her depression. Therapy alone isn't going to do it, she says. She's hoping that she and her husband can put a bid in on a house and move. But despite their steady jobs, that will take money and time. For The World, Erica Barris, Pittsburgh.
To hear Erica's full story from Pittsburgh, just go to PRI.org. Her reporting was supported by the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University.